All right, folks, welcome back to a new year and a new episode of the summer series here on the podcast. And today's one is a cracker. We're talking to someone who was a weekend millionaire who got stuck in a debt spiral and how he walked away from the party. But what else, Ben?
Well, Bryce, this is a story of turning horrible debt into the opportunity of productive debt. So it is another cracking financial transformation story. A really humbling story, an honest story of basically rebooting themselves. So I can't wait to get into the show.
It is a ripper story, folks. Let's rip into the show.
Welcome to The Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, co-host of Escape from the City on the ABC, and partner of Empower Wealth Advisory. Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investors Council of Australia and the founder of Empower Wealth Advisory, named the 2018 and 2019 Property Advisory Firm of the Year. Stay tuned as they bring you the insider's guide to property, finance and money management.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Property Couch podcast and the summer series. And Ben, I've got to say to you, mate, Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year back to you, mate.
Oh, it's a big year ahead. I'm excited about what 2023 is going to bring, Ben. 2022 was a contrast in the property market. It was a contrast for a lot of households with low interest rates at the beginning and higher interest rates towards the end. So there was an adjustment phase for a lot of folks. But going forward, hopefully 2023 is a year full of optimism and excitement and fun plans ahead. So Happy New Year to everyone. But we have got...
I'll tell you what it needs to be, mate. It needs to be a year of taking action.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Now, whether that's continued action that you're already taking and building that momentum on, but for others, there's no excuses. Right, I'm eyeballing everyone now. I'm telling everyone, no excuses.
Well,
so we're going to get into it.
I'm nervous already, Ben. I'm on the other side of the screen from you. But some incredible stories so far, Ben. Hopefully giving a platform for people to be inspired by what it takes to set up great principles around money and investing and planning for the future and having an eye on the prize. But today's story is an incredible story that I think a lot of people should get a lot of value out, because it shows how money is simple and behavior is hard. We talk about that a lot in this episode, but it also shows what happens when you chase money as a form of validation of self and what sort of problems that may be able to get you in, Ben. So it was a really great story that we had with David, Ben. So I think we should go and cut to the interview we recently had with David. All right, Ben, another very special guest today on the summer series of the Property Couch podcast. We are chatting with Property Couch listener David. Welcome to the Property Couch, David.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. We're excited to get on to all the nuances of your story, your money story, your property story. There's a bit to it, but I think you know where we're going to go with this first question, David. So let's start at the top. We want to know all of the foundational messages that you received as a kid growing up. Were there any conversations over the dinner table about money?
Sadly, no, not really. I was very lucky. I had a very privileged childhood. I didn't want for a lot. Only child, so I was kind of spoiled growing up. In terms of what do you do with money, no, there wasn't a lot going on. Mum and Dad, I think, never wanted to bother me with the ins and outs of it and let me enjoy my childhood. Mum and Dad did split when I was 12, so that obviously prompted some changes in scenario. And whilst Dad was very good at supporting from outside, there was, you know, the obvious financial burdens that go with starting again, I think. So money was a topic and wasn't always forthcoming, but generally, you know, I had a very good education, very good upbringing, but it wasn't a topic that we discussed at depth or in large. I guess the 80s and early 90s were an interesting time to grow up in the UK, but it was kind of get on with life and this is what you get. I think the overriding memory I have is a particular credit card company being everyone's flexible friend was their slogan, and that's kind of sticks in my mind from the childhood, which kind of tells you something about what we went into later on, I think.
Give us an insight into, you know, 80s and 90s growing up in the UK and not having conversations. So what was it about the situation that had impressions? And therefore, if there's no conversation with your folks, what were the impressions that you were observing?
Well, I think I was very privileged that they put me through a private school education, which was very positive for my education. But with our financial means, and certainly when mum and dad split, it left me as the poorer one in the class. Although we were probably across society doing quite well, my little ecosystem, if you like, was perhaps a skewed view of that. Everyone else was you know, flash cars and mum and dad dropping them off, running their own businesses, etc. My mum and dad did, you know, kind of stock standard run of the mill work, and we didn't have the necessary flashy lifestyle that some of my friends had, and the big houses, and you know, a couple of friends had swimming pools in the back garden, which is definitely an overspend in the UK.
I'm going to say, do you need a pool in the UK?
not really. So I think there was a bit of skew there, and I think I was always, it kind of set something in me that was chasing that lifestyle a little bit, which probably, as I say, sent me down a path that got me to the point of living outside my means as a young adult, I think.
So let's unpack that story pre your parents' separation. So you're a single child. Your parents are committed to the best education possible, and they believe that you'll get that through a private school type upbringing. Again, so you use the word spoiled. Can you just explain what a spoiled sort of, you know, paint a picture of what that would look like pre their separation?
Yeah, I think it's, I don't remember wanting for much as a child. I did have a quick conversation with mum to say that we were doing this, and she said, oh, there were plenty of times she said no. But it says something, I think, the fact that I don't really remember those times.
Family holidays, any of that sort of stuff going on?
Yeah. Yep. So we had a lot of overseas holidays, you know, going in and out of Europe. Yep. You know, I had the latest football or soccer kits. I had, you know, always had football boots. I always had trainers. I always had, you know, sports equipment. And it was, it probably wasn't always top of the range, but it was always good. It was always new.
And then post the separation, you spent 50-50 or most of your time with mum, or how did that all play out?
Most of the time with mum, saw dad at weekends, things like that. As I say, dad was pretty good at, you know, while him and mum didn't work, he still made sure we were looked after in terms of the finance side of things. So,
yep. But you also, what's interesting about that is, so some of that memory recall that you've got is really about what the other children had in terms of, obviously they were, you know, financially well off, and you saw that lifestyle. And you mentioned a little bit before about that. So is that, you know, lean into that in terms of, you see these nice cars, the swimming pools, the nice homes, I suspect the over-the-top sort of birthday party experiences that you're having and that type of thing. And you're sort of thinking, I want a little bit of this action.
Yeah, I think so. You're naturally drawn to it. You know, as a young lad, especially, you know, a young teenager, you're approaching the age to drive, and, you know, you see your mate's older brothers turning up as their first car's a BMW M3 and things like that, and you're thinking, wow, this is amazing. Yeah. You know, I've probably learned since that it wasn't all where everything it was cracked up to be, and we don't know how much finance and things were applied in those situations. Yeah. But yeah, at the time you're mesmerized by shiny things, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, you start chasing that and wanting that, and then there's an element of keeping up with the Joneses as well, that if the other lads are turning up with the newest football boots, you want to have the newest football boots because you want to fit in the changing room more. You don't want the mickey taken out of you, et cetera, et cetera, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm a product of public school, and so I can't relate to what you talked about, but I can try and imagine that, you know, you know, if you are going, you know, like you said, to a lot of people, that's great, you're going to private school, but within the ecosystem that you operated in, you're at the lower socio part of that scale. And in those impressionable years where you're trying to find a sense of your own significance and am I okay and do I matter? And, you know, it's very easy. I didn't grow up in the UK, obviously, but, you know, trying to get a sense of having those latest clothes and all of the fruit that comes from what you're observing, that could play with your sense of self-esteem and you know, your sense of who you are based on they've got more than me, so they must be better. I've got less, so I might not be better. So does any of that relate? And then part of the you know, the lead up to our conversation today, you had a statement around being a weekend millionaire. So I wonder if we could sort of lead up to that. Hey folks, real quick, I want to share with you that we are very active on socials, providing loads of free content, videos, and extra insights over and above the content on this show. And Ben and I would love to connect with you. So simply go to your favorite platform and search the Property Couch handle. That's all lowercase, one word, and we'll happily engage with you where you like to hang out. All right, now let's get back to the show.
Yeah, I think, it definitely skewed my view of actually where we were in the world. There were plenty of people that were far worse off than us. But as I say, in my initial little bubble, I didn't see that. And you then start to chase that dream of what you see and what's in front of you and keeping up the Joneses, like I say. So going into, my adult years and starting to work and earn money, and it then became going out and partying on the weekend. And you know, we'd get paid back then. Generally, it was in cash on a Thursday or a Friday. And by Monday, you'd be skint again and you'd be waiting, hanging out for payday on Thursday so you could go and live it up at the weekend again. And that became a kind of treadmill that I got myself into. And then it just kept going. And, you know, when you get to the point where you start spending outside your means or spending more than you're bringing in, and, you know, you start to find products that can help you with that. And then before you know it, you're on a treadmill that's continuing on for a long period of time, you know.
It's called a debt spiral, isn't it?
Yeah.
And when you say products, you mean ways of getting access to, easy credit?
Yeah. So I won't name the financial institution, but there's a particular institution that I was with in the UK that at the time in the UK, I don't know if it's the same in Oz, but you could sign for a check. You had to have a check guarantee card if it was over a certain amount for a lot of places to accept it. So I went and spoke to the bank about one of those. And admittedly, I was very naive at the time. But they came back to me a couple of days later and said, yeah, we can do this one for you, which will guarantee your checks. And I didn't even think anything of it until I'd had it for about 3 months. And it turned out it was a credit card. I started getting statements and bills. And it was probably not sold in the way that we would sell financial products today. And of course, I got that. And, you know, something comes up. It's a birthday. It's a holiday. It's a anything. Oh, well, I'll. You know, initially you say you're not going to use it, and then something comes up and you start to use it, and that was easy, and then all of a sudden that one's maxed out, and you're on this kind of treadmill.
Yeah. Can you take us to the point where you realized that was a problem? Getting the money on Friday and Thursday, burning it over the weekend, getting slowly introduced to credit. What was the point where you realized this is a problem?
And that's a really good question, because I'm probably going to sound horrible now, but my parents did what they thought was the right thing to do, especially my dad, and he bailed me out, which I'm grateful for in a lot of ways, because it kept me out of, kept me out of debt collectors, kept my credit history okay, et cetera, et cetera. But it didn't teach me a lesson, unfortunately. So, you know, one was bailed out. I was paying him back slowly and really slowly, probably less than the minimum payment would have been. But obviously there was no interest. But of course, when I got skint again, what did I do? I went and got another credit card, and I guess in the back of my mind, the arrogance, the immaturity was, I can probably get bailed out again if I really struggle with this one, but I'll be better this time. Mm. Which,
how,
you know.
David, how did that conversation go with your dad when he's cut the first check for you to clear your debt, and then did he give you any sort of mentoring or life lessons, or he sort of said, "What, you know, you got to pull your head in," or anything like that, or was it more just, you know, you're my son, and I'm happy to sort of give you this? What was the dialogue that went on at that time?
I think it was probably a mix of all three. There was definitely some advice given as to what you can do. But it was very simple, you know, and probably the best that Dad knew at the time, which was, you know, cut your cloth accordingly. Don't spend more than you earn. Put some money away in savings. You know, you're a brat for getting a credit card. You know they're bad. And then, of course, in the back of your head, you've got one, Dad.
yeah. Don't do what I do, son. Yeah,
exactly. So that, you know, I don't want to say double standard, but yeah, in your mind, it's a double standard. A bit, the dad's telling you you can't have one, and he can. So you think, you know, most people can manage it. I can manage it, and I'll manage it better next time.
So tell us about next time. So dad cuts the check, you get back, you go round two. What happens with round two?
Well, I think most people probably guess we did exactly the same thing, but I managed to get a slightly larger limit, and it became slightly more of a debt. And we kind of did on that treadmill. By the time it got to the end, I then thought, well, I know what I'll do. It's a clever idea, and I'll transfer the balance onto another one for 6 months free. That, of course, gave me a slightly larger limit. One thing led to another, and got to the point where Dad starts to see the red letters coming through the mailbox again and saying, I thought we'd sort this out. What's going on now? This is another company. So the same thing happened, and he bailed me out that time, which helped for a while. But the lifestyle got away with me again, you know. And I think I said to you guys, it was a champagne lifestyle and lemonade money. And I was living that, you know, partying at the weekends and going on holidays and doing all that stuff that, you know, young single lads like to do. But I wasn't working hard enough to sustain that level of lifestyle, unfortunately.
So, David, were you consciously aware, like, or were you just putting your head in the sand? Like, ultimately, at that moment in time, you know, if you're tapping and going, or you're signing for, back in the day, you would have signed your credit card to match the transaction. Were you looking at the statements? Were you adding up where you're at? Or again, was it just complete denial in terms of how your behavior was consistent with the situation that you were building yourself into?
You knew you had a problem, but at the time, you know, to coin the Aussie phrase, she'll be right, mate. You know, it'll be all right in the end. I'll get away with it. I'll find a way out. There was definitely points where you didn't open the mail that was coming through the door. You just chucked it straight in the bin. You claimed you hadn't received it. You told yourself you hadn't received it. Wow. And you convinced yourself that you had, you were going to be okay. But, you know, deep down, you know, it's stacking up somewhere, and at some point it's going to go bang. So
when did it go bang? When did you realize she won't be right? My dad's not going to keep bailing me out here.
Dad said no to the next credit card, and then you're sitting there paying the minimum payments, you're looking at it, and it was hard work. It was hard work to get myself out, to keep things going, to try and accept a change of lifestyle. And then Mum found out, and Mum got involved, and Mum then did what Dad had done. And I'm very lucky to say that Mum did it to a point where she wrote it off for me. She said, don't pay it back, because I had the opportunity to come travelling, and she believed, and I believe to this day rightly, that it would be good for me to go travelling and get out of the small town that I grew up in and experience a bit more of the world and change my lifestyle, I guess. And that's when, at 20, was I 27 years old, we got on a plane and did a round the world trip. So we got some money together. It wasn't anywhere near as much as the other lads I was travelling with, but we got enough money together to get me out and to be honest, I expected to be away maybe 3 or 6 months. And it was 4 years before I went home. So,
How did you get off that cycle though? So your mum bailed you out, then you're going on a, like, you know, you kind of think, well, I'd go and get a job, knuckle down, save some money, but no, you've gone, let's just jump on a plane and go and experience the world, which one thing is wonderful, right? The other part is, well, you got to fund it again, right? So did you, what did that look like?
So with mum bailing me out and sorting all those things out, the last couple of paychecks I had, I'd been made redundant in the UK. So I had a little bit come in from that. And my best mate was going travelling without a month's time. So it all just kind of fell into place. If I'm honest, I probably thought the travelling, like I say, was just going to be another holiday and probably was just an extension of the lifestyle that I was living. But then we got away and something changed, I think, in my mentality. Mum and Dad did help at periods. They dropped a little bits in the bank account over and Mum actually managed the bank account and would pay me a small wage each week, month, whatever it was, to make sure I didn't blow it all in the first couple of days. And which is probably quite sad at 27 that you still need that, but it worked and it kept me away and we were lucky, we saw some wonderful sights, did some wonderful things. And then I got to Australia and I got to Brisbane and I didn't have a lot of money in the pocket and Mum and Dad had gone, right, sort yourself out now. And I was lucky, I found a job fairly quickly. I found a shared accommodation to live in, started to get a paycheck pretty quickly. And from there, learned what it was like to live on your own 2 feet without your parents and having to live within your means, or trying to live within your means. I didn't always get it right, you know, and there were times where I had to borrow money off friends or whatever. But slowly but surely became more of an adult and more responsible and learned that you couldn't go out all the time. You couldn't party all the time if you didn't have the money to do it, you know?
Mm. Do you feel comfortable telling us what the peak debt was around these period of your life?
In all honesty, at those points, they weren't massive. They were kind of $3,000-$4,000 UK. So, you know, probably double for Australia, not knowing what the exchange rate was at that time. The debt got larger and later on, unfortunately, with a few other decisions that we made. So I think I settled down a lot. I wasn't going out as much. I met a lady. We decided we were going to get married. That proved very expensive. We wanted a new car. We wanted new furniture. So all of a sudden, we were on the consumer debt trail again. With this time it's a car loan though, so it was sensible apparently. And it was the 2 years interest free on the furniture when we moved into a new house, which we were going to pay off before the 2 years were done, and of course life gets in the way and things. So, you know, probably 10 no not quite 10 years probably 7 or 8 years after sorting myself out and living without any debt for a while, all of a sudden I'm back in debt, but I feel like I'm a more responsible adult who's got plans to pay it off. I'm earning a better wage. So I feel like I can manage it. But unfortunately, that relationship didn't work. And that left me with, most of it was in my name. So that left me with a fair amount of debt to pay off, which, you know, in hindsight wasn't the most sensible thing. But these things happen in life, right?
What period of time are we talking? What year roughly?
So that was just before I moved to Perth. So I moved to Perth in end of 2015, and I was probably around 40 to 45k in consumer debt. You know, obviously I had the furniture and the car that we bought with that, so I wasn't completely penniless and I wasn't, you know, for nothing. But still, it's a large millstone around your neck.
It is. So, David, take us through your money routines at that time. Like, were you reconciling your bank statements every month in terms of checking to see what you were spending? Was there a budget in place in terms of, did you know how much you were, I mean, you're obviously nodding in terms of no, you know, as I can see on the video screen, but take us through what did it look like in terms of how you organized and managed that money?
Well, I think I guess the change this time to last time was that I was on my own. So the bills started to come first. So the you didn't miss the minimum payment on the loan. You didn't miss the minimum payments on the credit card. You didn't miss the rent. You didn't miss buying food. It might have been the budget version of the food and you know, carrying on the backpacker lifestyle of noodles and that kind of stuff, but and not the most healthy diet. But the financial spend, I guess, was dictated by how much surplus balance there was on the credit or left to use on the credit card and what was left in the bank account once the bills had gone out. But there was no saving. There's never been any saving. It's something that, you know, that's probably a lasting memory for me of I guess, my, you know, and as I went into to changing my habits was realizing the habits and behaviors and things that have been ingrained in you. So we were told, and perhaps going back to kids, we were told from kids and from you save money and it's good to save money. And, you know, with inflation at the moment and interest rates, maybe not so much, but it's good to save money. So when you're not a saver, and I'm definitely not a saver, I'm a spender, all of a sudden you're telling yourself, well, obviously I'm no good with money because I can't save, and good people who are good with money save. So I think that played into the self-esteem a bit as well. And you told yourself, well, it's inevitable because I'm no good with money. And so that spending just became, you know, everything went. And again, by the end of the paycheck, you were waiting for the next paycheck and you were living hand to mouth.
And David, so there's a couple of things going on here, right? Because obviously it's not your money, right? Obviously the money that you're borrowing, the credit money that you're borrowing and so forth is effectively someone else's money and you've got that obligation. But when you were checking the credit card balances and you were, as you just said, you were making those minimum repayments, and this is the big problem with the you know, the debt spiral that people get into. They feel like making the minimum repayments is actually paying off the debt, but no, the minimum repayments is just covering the interest, right? So ultimately it's very easy to then think, well, I'm covering that. But in theory, you just, the momentum builds up, the psychology and the acceptance, the acceptable behavior that you can continue to tap into the limit on the credit card. And that's ultimately where you get to that higher limit and you find yourself in this debt spiral. Is that the way it felt for you?
Yes. Yeah. You know, I remember one day sitting in the kitchen and actually looking at the bill for the first time in a long time and seeing one of the, and I think it was about the time they started printing on credit card statements, if you continue to pay the minimum payment, you'll pay this off in 45 years or whatever it was.
Good.
And that, yeah, that triggered something. And I went, that doesn't sound great. I will be, you know, close to 70, I think. So then I, you know, we got to the point where bonuses and things started to grow at work. So every now and then, you know, we get a bonus a month. Every now and then I'd try and throw a little bit more on the card, thinking I'll keep paying the minimum and I'll throw a little bit more on. But to a point that just gave me more to spend when I was broke later on, because that actually paid some of the principal down and gave me some more available cash to spend.
Yeah.
So, debt in that scenario that you're in is just, debt can be a wonderful friend, but a terrible enemy. And it's when you're in that space where you feel like, you know, that you're only just bobbing above the surface of the water. And quite often, you know, on paper you go, I get that full bonus and I should pay it down and just use it all. But you're kind of feeling, because I'm feeling in this negative headspace, I actually want to take a bit of that and actually provide some joy in the moment. And because I don't really want to pay for the sins of the past right now, because I'm already feeling the burden of the sins of the past. And I actually just want to enjoy myself now. So it becomes a terrible place to be in, because what you quickly realize is money is simple, behavior is hard. And that's when you really get an acute sense of behavior being hard, because everyone goes, oh, why didn't you put the bonus on it? But it's not until you walked in those shoes that you actually get that sense.
Yeah, I think from there, it's also that society has, there's a societal expectation as a 35-year-old man, you should have your stuff together, you know, and you should You shouldn't be in this mess. So there's people will tell you when you talk to them about it, you should do this. But then people also expect you to have your stuff together. So there's a contradiction in there as well, you know.
Isn't that interesting? Because you go, you should know it at 35. And then you unpack it and you go, actually, why should I? Didn't learn it at school. No one's telling me along the way. All I am is just another birthday older on top of, you know, whatever lessons I learned, which is why we start the podcast. What were the conversations you had over the dinner table? Because at 35, you're just living out the actions that you had when you were 6 and when you were 3 and when you're 9 and when you're 40. Like 35 just means an extra candle on the birthday cake, right? So when you gave us a heads up about today's conversation, you said March 2018 was a pivotal moment for you. Why was March 2018 a pivotal moment for you?
Yeah, I think that was probably the tipping point for me. I think, you know, I met my current partner, Carla, in 2016. Carla is a saver and is much better at saver and squirreling things away than I am. When she realized I had consumer debt, she's never had any consumer debt and was, why have you got consumer debt? And she's a talker, so she got me talking about it, and we talked about things, and we butted heads quite a lot because we have a very differing background and still do a very differing set of values around money in a lot of respects. But it was good because we talked about it, and we challenged each other, and we worked out that it couldn't go on as it was. It wasn't sustainable, which I knew deep down, and I think I was of the mindset that it needed to change myself. But having that support network, that accountability partner, whatever you want to call it, around someone backing you to help you, changed it. We had a few conversations with people at work and friends and peer group and the Barefoot Investor, I think, was at its heights of
circulation.
Yep. Circulation, and it was certainly a hot topic. And we were in Kmart one day, and I saw it, and it was $20. And I thought, why not? I've heard so many good things. Why not have a look and see what this is cracked up to be? Yeah. When I read it and said, you've got to live your life on 10% of your income, I nearly put it down again and used it to prop up the coffee table. But we sat down and we both read it, and then we kind of came back together and said, well, what do we think? Can we do it? And I think we made the agreement that something had to change, so why not? We'd had friends that had made a success of it in various different degrees. So we almost overnight bit the bullet and gave it a go. We changed to a more bucketed system. We didn't quite mirror exactly everything, you know, in terms of percentage-wise. We worked out that perhaps we didn't need the same amount of percentages to cover all our bills, so that enabled us to throw a bit more to debt. And at this point, I owed, I think it was $1,500 to my dad. I owed $2,500, I think, to my mum. And all of a sudden, by changing that, they were gone almost in an instant. You know, dad, as it happened, we were moving house, and dad had given me some of the money for a deposit on a rental property. So when we moved, we had enough for the deposit on the next rental property and was able to give that money straight back to dad. And all of a sudden, that debt snowball, as I think it's termed, or domino in your debts, it just clicked with me that forget the highest interest, forget the, just get one off the cards. And that psychology of doing it and achieving was the bit that kind of aha moment for me, I think.
That's an important point to lean in on. If anyone's listening to this and they can relate to being in a debt spiral, there's two concepts. It's the debt avalanche and the debt snowball. And the debt avalanche is pay the most expensive one off first so that it becomes an avalanche of payments. And the other one is the debt snowball, where it's a momentum game, where you pay off the smallest first so that you can feel you can have wins. And it doesn't make sense mathematically to do that, but it makes sense psychologically to do that. Because if we say it again, money's simple, behavior is hard. You're actually trying to game the behavior. And part of that gaming of the behavior is to see wins, even though logically, you know, I probably should pay off the most expensive one first. I want to pay off the smallest one first. So is that to your point? You said that's how you were getting some wins?
100%, 100%. It's, and you're right. Money is the tool with which we're used to trade. It's not, money's not the problem. Money's not the answer. It's you and your behaviors that dictate wins and losses. Same as it is in the rest of the world, right? So, that, and that's the bit that I've learned over the last, you know, 2-5 years with the journey that we've done, with the education that we've given ourselves. You know, we're so lucky with the tools that we have available, your podcasts, your books, the other podcasts and books, and access to this stuff that I didn't have as a younger age, or certainly couldn't seek out at a younger age. And yeah, it was, for me, it was that, wow, that's one clear tick, you know, it feels like a weight's off your shoulders. That's, dad's now happy. Dad's now, for the first time in a long time, dad's looking at his spreadsheet going, David doesn't owe me any money, you know, and that. And then mum starts to see the money that she was getting doubled, or I can't remember the exact percentages, but she's now getting more money each week to pay down that debt. So she's now getting on board with the journey. Of course, it's all Carla's doing, none of it's my own, but so, you know, that wins Carla some brownie points as well. So we're now moving forward. Your parents are starting to believe in you and recognize the change again, which I think at times when it came to money, you know, comments every now and then for Christmas, I'll give you some money, but now I'm going, piss it up the wall, and you know, I'm a 35-year-old man getting told those kind of things. You're kind of thinking, I should be past that, but I understand where you're coming from, you know. So yeah, it was those aha moments of you know, now I'm achieving, now we're moving. Where can this go? And you know, the initial book we bought talked very much about getting a banker off your back, and planning for retirement and things like that. And we started to do those sums, and we started to do that. What does that mean for us? What are we going to retire on? You know, we both moved to Australia at a similar time, although independently from each other. And our supers aren't, you know, we haven't been working since we were 18. So our supers, we started late with that. So that's going to hurt us in the long run. And when we did the sums, it didn't add up. We weren't going to have enough to retire on, and certainly at the age but I'd like to retire. I don't want to be in the workforce at 70, you know, still slogging it away. So how do we make that happen? And then that's when we started looking into investing or producing some income. How do we make this money work better for us?
So I want to go into that, David, but I do want to bring us back just to one little bit there. You talked about no good with money, right? That was the mindset that you had. You also said you had this sort of low self-esteem around that. But you mentioned, you know, probably about 3 or 4 minutes earlier that you would still debate Carla around good money management. Like you were, so I want to know what your debate technique or tactic was at that moment. Because this is, and the reason why I'm asking and I'm leaning in on this and I want to unpack it is because I want other people who are listening in who might be in a similar situation to sort of say, if that's the arguments that they're using, really their arguments aren't stacking up, you know, like under the pressure cooker or under peer review. So what were some of the, like if she says, look, you're doing this wrong with money, what was your counter to that in terms of, because you really didn't have a track record to stand on?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I guess the best example is kind of possession. So take the car, for example. Carla was driving around in an old Honda, $2,000 Honda, that was, you know, it was doing the job for what she needed, whereas I was driving around in a 4-year-old Nissan that, you know, has a 4-wheel drive and can get you off-road. We enjoy camping. So it enabled me to have cheaper holidays because I wasn't spending lots on staying in hotels because I could go camping. It meant that we had a reliable car to, you know, get to and from work, so there wasn't the risk of it breaking down, which is going to save me money on recovery costs. So there was, you know, at this time I was a salesman by trade, so spinning a story yes. and winning an opinion was
But you overcome objections all the time. You just have another objection to overcome.
And in theory, I can see many households having that same conversation. Like, you know, but if we really want to go to the best areas to camp where no one else can get to, we need the higher wheel, you know, the higher wheel clearance and the additional suspensions and all. And, you know, you go there once a year or twice. Do you know what I mean? So I get, but it's good that you're honest about that in terms of that they were the yarns that you were spinning around sort of justifying your money decisions at that time. But at some point, Carla comes along as the white knight. And also you've got this silent mentor in Scott Pape, AKA the Barefoot Investor, who has done an enormous good for this country in terms of giving people a framework to think about in terms of how they've, you know, he's done some of the biggest heavy lifting in this particular space, and all credit to him, because that's the journey that we're all on in trying to teach people better money habits. And now the pivot occurs, right? So ultimately the self-esteem's turning around because you're making, as Bryce was saying, you paid off, you've got momentum, you paid off the one of the cards. So that feels like progress. You're giving your dad some money back, you're giving your mum some money back. And now the world's turning in your favor. And no more do you need to start telling yourself this story that you're no good with money. So, and then all of a sudden, opportunity and potential arrives at your doorstep because you've done the work on yourself. And now you're in a position where you can ultimately move forward. At that moment, did it feel like that? Did it feel like weight lifting off your shoulder and now I can actually get serious about my future?
Yes. Yeah, 100%. We got to the point where I wanted to be, 40 was fast approaching, and there was something in my mind that says you can't turn 40 and still owe your parents money. And still owe money. So we got to the point where, like I say, mum and dad were coming along on the journey now, and we're appreciative of the change we made. And Carla being a talker really has helped me open up, because I'm quite a closed book most of the time. Yep. And really helped me to talk through with mum and dad what we were doing. You know, I'd never done it before because I didn't want them to know what I was doing with my money. So we got to that point, and that enabled us to bring them along on the journey. They then got involved and were happy to take on some of the debt to help us with the interest, which enabled us to get it down faster. But of course, that brought this thing for me of not owing my parents money by the time I turned 40. And that was the milestone that we drove towards in terms of the debt, and we managed to get there a little bit early, which was great. And it enabled us with the money that we weren't paying in interest and things like that to save a deposit for the property.
So you set yourself a target. Mm-hmm. It's a short-term target. It's quite achievable. What did you do? You organized your money. You actually sat down and you calculated all of the pieces. So you organized, calculated, you got a sense of that. You got those short-term. Tell me also about the strength of your relationship as a couple. Did that improve from where it was, where maybe there was some negative discussions around money, or is Carla just one of those beautiful people who accepts you for the way you are?
I think both. Carla was certainly very accepting at the time. She didn't agree with it. And it's interesting, some of the conversations we've had since around what we understood about money and things like that. So it certainly challenged both of our views, which is good. But it's made us stronger. I think we both are very, very clear on where we want to go and why we're going on that journey. We both like the idea of financial freedom, not necessarily retiring early, but certainly having the freedom to pick and choose what we do, so that we can travel more, we can, spend more time doing the finer things in life, and that's where we're going. So it's really kind of embedded that, and we spent a lot of time talking about it. One thing we did take from the Barefoot was the date night, and we sit down and to some it's probably boring, but we have a glass of wine on a Friday night, and quite often the topic turns to, what's the next step in that journey? Is it renos at home? Is it another investment property? Is it just sitting tight on some money, etc., etc.? And keeping that conversation open and keeping those goals aligned is a big reason of why we're where we are.
David, I had an aha moment a little while ago when you started talking about Carla. So I think she's incredible in this story for two reasons. One, the fact that she had that faith of, you know, oh, you've got this large amount of debt. So happy to go, all right, well, let's build a plan for that. But secondly, I was thinking as we were starting this conversation, you're really articulate around it. It flows really naturally. It's not like there's any stuttering. Your recall of it's really strong. And then all of a sudden you said, oh, Carla's a talker, and we've talked it through. And I'm thinking, ah, got it. Because this is not your first rodeo. This is not the first time you've had this conversation. And so it's coming across as we chat to you, because there's no emotion that's coming from this. You're just going, this is matter of fact. This is what we did. This is the journey we've been on. And clearly there's a win part of this story. In 2019, May 2019, you became debt free. What did you do after that?
We were debt free just before that, I think, and then May 2019 was when we bought this place, so our principal place of residence. So we've been here, like I say, just over 3 years now, and we hunted around for a long time. We were on the lookout. I was still chasing my citizenship in Australia, so permanent residency in Australia. So once that, it's very hard, as you may well know, to lend or to borrow money, especially for a home loan up until that point. So it was, I guess, a stumbling block for us. So once that was done, our parents, both mine and Carla's, were kindly offered to contribute a little bit to help us with the deposit. So rather than sitting there paying someone else's mortgage, it was, you know, at the time the mortgage was going to be less than we were paying in rent. We knew, or we felt, the property we found was giving us a good deal for land size, in a suburb that was just about to have a train station put in, close to the airport, 15 minutes from the city. So even if it wasn't quite our forever home, it was certainly what we felt was going to be a good investment. And it was certainly going to do us for the next 5 to 10 years as our principal place of residence as well.
You're now a Perth boy, David, so a natural affinity towards you already. But you bought the principal place of residence, but there's more to your property journey. What did you do after that?
After that, we spent a lot of date nights. We spent a lot of Friday night wine talking about what we were going to do next. The house we were living was built in 93, and there hadn't been much done to it since 93. So a lot of the initial thoughts were around renovating, making it nice. We were lucky. We were trapping about 2.5k a month in terms of surplus once we paid off all the debt. So we were saving a good lick of money after paying all the bills, and we wanted to put that money to work. But at the time we continued to educate ourselves. We continued to talk about it. We found other podcasts. I found you guys. We read your book. We started to listen to the podcasts. We understood your financial management system. We refined the initial system that we used in terms of the buckets, which was quite complicated. And, you know, we almost had a bucket for everything, for petrol, for food, for bills, for all of this.
Not uncommon, David, not uncommon.
Yeah. And look, it worked for us and it got us to a point, certainly. But like anything, your journey evolves and changes, right? So I really like the idea of trapping all that surplus and having everything coming out of that one account. All the money goes into the offset, all the money comes out. We chose to stay away from the credit card, probably with my track record and the fact that it may well worry about your top end of your borrowing capacity. So we stayed away from that. And like I say, we flip-flopped. We improved, we learned, we studied, we read articles, we dabbled with micro investing in you know, Raise and other platforms like that. We've got a small share portfolio, and then eventually we decided that we couldn't decide exactly what we were going to do with this place and what we wanted to tackle first. And it's the open plan living where the floor goes all the way through. So then if you're going to do the kitchen, you've got to do the flooring off. You know, where do you start? Don't know. So in the end, it almost became easier to buy an investment property. We had the money sitting there. House prices were going up through COVID. And we were able to make when we got this place valued. We'd made about 160K on it. So we were able to take a lot of that equity and use it for an investment property. So that was the decision that we made and went with it. Unfortunately, we did it slap bang before the interest rates started going. But, you know, it's a long-term hold. So
It is a long-term hold. I love that story. And in terms of the hybrid system that you've settled on, obviously less buckets, everything running out of a primary offset account. Is there a seven-day float? Like, is there a little sort of an amount, a weekly allowance that you're running as part of trying to run some discipline around your money management?
Yeah, so we've still got a separate budget for food, which goes into an account, which gets paid into.
Yep.
Every so Carla's wage comes in, that goes straight in the offset. My wage comes in fortnightly. So Carla gets paid monthly, I get fortnightly. So fortnightly, mine kind of gets dished out each fortnight. Yep. And then anything that's left goes into the offset. So yep. We both have, we contribute to a small savings fund, which is kind of for presents and stuff. And we've got our own spending money. Yep. And then we've got the food account and everything else just goes into the offset.
And the rent on the new investment property goes straight into the offset?
Yeah. So the rent comes into the offset on our PPR
yep.
To try and trap as much here and get that down. And, you know, we're on interest only, and we'll hopefully get the tax breaks from that later on.
So, can I ask about that fortnightly pay of yours? Is that going into a separate account first, and then the leftover goes into the offset?
Yeah, so it comes into purely because I work for a financial institution, so I get yep. if I get some staff rates if I move a certain amount of money through there, so it's easier for my pay to come in there first.
Right.
It comes in on the Wednesday and everything's set to go where it needs to go.
Okay, good. Because I was going to say that, yeah, that's probably you could tidy that up if you needed to put it into the main account and then dish out from there. But there's obviously a reason for that in terms of how you then make that account. You know, obviously monthly account keeping fees are waived, I suspect, if there's a $1,500 amount going through or held in there each month.
You're right.
Got it. Okay, right. Yeah, understood. So, mate, this is the transformational story. These are the stories that we just get so thrilled about having conversations to, because it's possible. You know, you even at 35, you're staring down the barrel of owing money to your parents. Well, no, not stare. You owe money to your parents. You're staring down the barrel of being 40 and still having nothing, you know, other than a car and some furniture, which we all know are depreciating assets. And you've organized your affairs. You no longer believe that, you're no good at money. I mean, now you got your spreadsheets, you know, ultimately, who knows, you may get onto the More platform and, you know, become more sophisticated as you, you know, build that knowledge piece out. This is a great story. So I suppose my final question to you really comes back to, you've got the floor to the community. I think there's an enormous amount of takeaways, but in your words, what do you want to tell others about what's possible?
Look, I think anything is possible. I think the first couple of steps are having the conversations, having the trust in those around you that, you know, and opening up.
Being vulnerable, yep.
It's yeah, being vulnerable, opening up and having those conversations. You know, without giving relationship advice, if those people aren't prepared to accept where you're at, then that's maybe a different conversation. But if you're lucky like I was and you've got someone who's going to support you through it, that power of doing it together will make it a lot easier. And I think you guys do a really good job of making this clear, but you're only as good as your education. You know, I think, you know, I guess one thing I would say to any parents out there is talk to your kids about this stuff. Work out a way of however it works for you with showing them the benefits of compounding interest with their pocket money. You know, the earlier you get on it, and that's, I guess, my biggest regret now is that I didn't know this stuff earlier. And where would I be if I did? You know, and I don't want to look back and because I made a lot of mistakes along the way myself, and I'm sure if I'd wanted to learn this stuff, I could have done. But, it's talk about it, whether it's to your parents, to your partner, to your family, to your kids, the more we talk about this, the more we make money a less taboo subject, the better off we will all be. you know, the fact that we don't share salaries at work, it's still so private. It's still so personal. It's, we never talk about money. It's affronting. People get upset by it. People get, and we don't learn. We share knowledge and information on all sorts of topics, but money's not one of them, unfortunately. And it needs to change, I think.
Mine was, I've got two-part final question. One's a slight extension of Ben's, and I think you've answered it largely, but I make the call out to come on and share your story. And some of your early part of your story is, for a lot of people, they wouldn't want to share that bit. What was the little, how did you, what made you put your hand up and say, oh, I'm going to share my story? Because it's powerful, but not easy to be in your shoes.
No, and there have been plenty of times, and I still have regrets about the way I acted when I was younger. But, you know, I think I'm old enough and wise enough now to know that I can't change it. And I wouldn't be who I was today without that. And I perhaps wouldn't have the passion that I have now for this journey and helping people on this journey had I not really experienced the hard times as well. Because it seemed very easy to fall into what I did, but it's just as easy to do what I'm doing now. And it's just, like I say, that communication, that education piece that, you know, not so much these days, but, you know, the marketing prowess of a large financial institution to sell you their new credit card product is a lot larger than a lot of people who are trying to educate, you know, and try and do things. I read Mr. Kiyosaki's book the other day. I forget the name of it now, but it's been around for 25 years.
Rich Dad Poor Dad.
That's the one. Yes, that's the one. Thank you. And he was talking there that, we don't teach our kids about compounding interest and things like that in school. And that's 25 years ago. And I don't imagine it's changed a lot since. Why not? Where is that education piece so that we don't get fooled by these marketing and whatever campaigns, you know?
Yeah, it's a good call. Well done. So my final question for you is, well done for being so brave. So thank you on behalf of everyone who's listened to this. My final question is, what's the goal? Where are we headed? What's the North Star? You've bought your first investment property. What's the game? Where are you and Carla headed?
Yeah, so we're slowly chipping away every now and then and small regular deposits into a share portfolio. We contribute a little bit extra to the super. We're looking at certainly one more investment property, depending on the sums and how things are looking at that time. At the moment, that's probably getting close to our borrowing capacity at that stage. However, who knows what the future holds in terms of, you know, pay rises, etc. I don't have a set number of properties. I don't have a set number of investments that we need to make. Ideally by 55, so 13 years' time, I'd like to be able to have the power to choose the days I work and spend a bit more time on the golf course and a bit more time away camping and that kind of thing. So working towards that number for us to be able to sustain that lifestyle is the key thing for us and however we get there. Property is something I enjoy. It's something Carla enjoys. So we enjoy that process. So I definitely see that as being And the joy of leverage, right? That's the way that we can get there faster than just trickling into a share portfolio. It may be that we go one more investment property and then we buy upgraded PPR and this becomes a rental property, so or investment property. So three probably investment properties is about where we need to be from my rudimentary spreadsheet abilities to tell us.
And what's the passive income target that you're sort of trying to live off in retirement, David?
So we're looking around what you guys talk about. So around that 2K a week mark.
Yep.
Which, you know, we'd like to have our PPR mortgage paid off by that point. So if we've got none of that, then that's more than successful enough for us, I think, for the two of us.
Brilliant.
Mate, you're a credit to yourself. Well done to the hidden person in this discussion of Carla. She's obviously had an enormous impact on your life. So that seems to be a wonderful connection, mate. But again, thanks for being so transparent and authentic. And, mate, it's just been a joy having a conversation with you. And I promise it's not a West Australian bias here, mate.
It's definitely not, because, you know, you are making a difference to other people's lives by telling your story, mate. So we really appreciate it.
So from everyone here on the Property Couch, mate, thank you very much. Oh, there you go, Ben. It's a transformational story. But what a wonderful woman Carla is. What a shame we didn't get to meet her.
Oh, well, she is the white knight in this story. I mean, you know, we're talking about someone who has been, who grew up in a pretty privileged situation, not you know, super wealthy, but still to be able to go to private school, as he said, had the best opportunities. You know, single child. So one would say didn't miss out. And we heard evidence there in David's story about being bailed out and so forth. So I refer to this as sugar hits, you know, sort of sugar hit happiness versus sustained happiness. And he's been able to transform into that more sustained happiness mode, as opposed to the classic sugar hit situations that he was having. And then it was obviously, you know, when he was getting into these debt spirals, it was impacting his self-esteem. You know, he was, to his point, he really wasn't good with money management. Mm-hmm. You know, it sort of burned a hole in his pocket. But this is what I'm talking about. So those people who feel, you know, that they have that low self-esteem, that inadequate situation, getting out there with a retail therapy and just spending and not being accountable to yourself is going to be a sugar hit in terms of a happiness story. It's not going to be sustained happiness. So Carla, as that white knight coming in and potentially teaching him some better money habits, shout out also to Scott Pape, aka the Barefoot Investor, who also has played a role not only in his household but in others. That silent mentor also played a big role here. And now I see their story as having tremendous upside. And really now it's about building that momentum and, you know, what we often talk about in terms of optimizing for best sequencing of the best results. So this is an opportune time for them to build a solid plan, think about what their criteria is in terms of what they want to get in that plan, and then basically put that into action, because they've started the investment journey. So now it's about making every post a winner from here on in.
And it goes to show that 1 and 1 is 11 here. So when you have David meeting Carla, that became an amplification story because they had different values around money. But here's the beautiful thing, and I think we should lean in on this, Ben, is they had lots of conversations around money. They communicated really well about money. And to David's credit, he identified that Carla's money beliefs were better than his money beliefs. So he defaulted to that. So the conversations and the communication, the commitment to actually having a positive outcome was something that I really love here. And also, Ben, the fact that he avoids credit cards now, given that there was an early problem with that, that is incredible wisdom. And our money smart system has a credit card as part of it. But if you are dancing with the devil, or you have challenges in your backstory around access to credit, you do not need to use a credit card to still implement the money smart system. So just smart, wise counsel between the two of them, but also making positive steps going forward to know that, hey, I am a reformed spender. I am a reformed person that's done it on credit, but there is always the little niggle in the back of my mind that if I get one of those, I may get back into the same spot. So lots of really good stuff to learn from the adversity from the early part of that money story.
Yeah, what I love about this is David was so honest and vulnerable about his story to us. And I suspect that there's a lot of people in our community who may be listening to that story who wouldn't want to share through potential embarrassment and so forth about the situation that they have. So for David to be so brave and to come on the show and talk to that story, because now he's out the other side, so, you know, it's probably easier to talk. But those people who might find themselves, you know, post-Christmas into the new year and not organized with their money, it is super important that you basically own up to that story, right? And, you know, grow some confidence around how you want to do that. And I can tell you the best way to do that is to spend a bit of time in organizing your finances and understanding where it all goes, right? Where that money goes, and then sort of start saying to yourself, What is essential? What is discretionary? How can I improve that? What value am I getting out of that spend? Is it a short-term sugar hit, or is it going to be a longer-term sustained level of financial comfort that I'm going to be able to build? And from that comfort and those money conversations, you're starting to build the better person of who you want to be, and that makes you feel happier. So there is an alignment. There is a connection. It is built into the fabric of who you are in terms of being able to change that. And not only we heard this from David's story, but you heard the story of others. It is a choice. It is a choice that people are making about how they choose to act with money. And some people are choosing to act really smartly. They're choosing to invest in themselves. They're choosing to invest in their knowledge, and they're choosing to invest in tools and potentially professional help in terms of being able to improve their probability of success. And that's all we can ask of people as you're thinking about the new year. And if you've got any New Year's resolutions, one must be to get organized and feel in control of your money. And so, of course, that's part of who we are and what we want to teach you.
Yeah, well done. And I guess there is a little bit of a story there too, Ben, about keeping up with the Joneses. So if when David said that he went to private school, but he was on the lower end of the socio scale, that's a microcosm of life, right? We might be in our own street, and our house might be on the lower end of what we're seeing in the street, or our car might be on the lower end of what we're seeing in the street. And you can see the challenges that provided, because on the outside, you go and chase those shiny things.
Yep.
But you can see from just the incredible transparency of this story that people have got to pay for that somehow. And quite often people are paying in silence, in suffering as well. So folks, if you can get secure within your own self, and not need outside external validation from all these other things, you can get on top of your money. And it's not just David who fell for that, folks. We've all done it. And it's something that if we can get on top of, we'll get better at managing our money. Now, Ben, I also want to say to those people that have been listening, New Year, you and I have put together a masterclass. And we are launching it officially next week. But as a loyal summer series listener, we're giving you an advanced look at that. So if you go to thepropertycouch.com.au/masterclass, you can register for that, where you and I go through how to create a property portfolio that is $2,000 a week. Ben, we do a case study on the new More platform. So you can actually go and see how we go through the nuts and bolts of all of that. So I want to encourage anyone who really wants to get in touch with their money management this year, a couple of things. Go and get access to the More app, MOORR, whether that's in the App Store or on Google Play, wherever you get it. Go and plug your numbers in and work it out. And then go and watch the masterclass, Ben, and see what you can do once you've trapped that surplus, how you can set yourself up for a wonderful life by design, Ben, from doing a couple of those things.
Yeah, our mission is simple. It remains really clear to us in terms of our North Star, and that is we want to see our community continue to build more and more of our members in the community with sustained happiness, right? And sustained happiness is that lifestyle by design, as we call it. But we can't do it, unfortunately, without money, right? Unfortunately, we have money coming in, we have money going out. And so I'm really excited about what the masterclass is going to be able to do in terms of teaching you some of the critical fundamentals and some of the, the insights and what you need to be aware of in terms of how you can make it possible for yourself. And that's consistent with the platform that we're building in terms of that we're looking at the critical pillars, the goal setting. We're looking at, the big rocks in the jar. We're looking at the money management through Money Smarts, Money Stretch, Money Fit. We're looking at the property story. So, of course, we want to talk about demand, supply. We want to talk about, economic activity, human interest, human behavior, and teach you around those types of things. And obviously, from a wealth building point of view, this happens over time, delayed gratification, building out, building momentum on that. And on the back of your little sneak peek, Bryce, I'm saying that there is something very special coming to the More platform very soon. I'll have more to say about it later in the summer series. But it really is about trying to identify, bringing the future into the now is the best way I'll describe it for now. But that's what we're here to do. So I can't wait to see what we unpack in 2023 because I have line of sight on all the things that are going on and that are happening. And I can tell you that there's going to be some pretty amazing features that are going to be rolled out for our community. And because we're absolutely steadfast on making sure that you can have sustained financial well-being. And ultimately that will hopefully lead to a happier lifestyle outcome for you.
Love it, Ben. Thank you, David. Wonderful story. Thank you too, Carla, if you're listening to this. And thank you to the both of you for modeling wonderful habits within a relationship and what it was and what it now is and showing us how you're reaping the benefits of that. So, Ben, started the year with a bang. We still have more to go. We've got more stories coming up in our summer series, mate. So until next week's story.
Taking action. Do it now. Your future self will thank you for it.
There you go, folks. See you next week.
Hey guys, Bryce here again. Just want to catch you before you go and let you know, if you're new to our community, there are a lot of episodes to catch up on, but it's really important that you start from the very beginning at episode number one. Because episode 1 through to 20 share all of the foundational pillars and frameworks that you need to know to get the best out of listening to this podcast. So I'd recommend that you start there. And the little tip is to maybe start on 1.5 speed. Now, for those of you that are time poor and don't have time to go back from the beginning, don't worry, we've got you covered as well, because we've created a binge guide that goes through all of the details and makes it easy for you to read and get up to speed very, very quickly. So if you go to thepropertycouch.com.au/fast-track, you will be able to download that binge guide and you will be up to speed in no time. And whilst you're there, I've got a few extra goodies for you because we have our top 5 frameworks that you'll learn on this podcast, as well as the Make Money Simple Again ebook, which will help you with the foundations of basic money management so you'll have everything you need to succeed in building your own lifestyle design and getting the best out of this podcast. Now, just a reminder that anything that we cover on this podcast is not considered financial advice. We certainly recommend that you get your unique circumstances looked at by your individual advisor, and everything we talk about is just general in nature. But folks, I want to encourage you again to go to thepropertycouch.com.au/fast-track, and you can go and get all those goodies and catch up right away.